Thank you for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Democracy Watch, the News Collective's weekly local current affairs program. It's Thursday, November 16th at 5:03 p.m. We're broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. I'm Madeline.
And Christina, we're going to be reading the headlines for this week. On Wednesday, November 15th, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was spotted at a cafe in White Rock. He arrived to show support for Liberal candidate Gordon Hogg, who will be running for the South Surrey White Rock riding in the upcoming federal by-election. Trudeau has announced a December 11th by-election in four federal districts across Canada. The BC riding of South Surrey White Rock became vacant when former Conservative MP Diane Watts stepped down to run for provincial Liberal leadership in BC.
Vancouver's bike share expands to East Vancouver. The city's year-old Moby Bike Share program is expanding to include residents of East Vancouver. Moby bike stations can currently be found throughout downtown Vancouver and the West End. On Wednesday, the City Council voted to expand the program to both Strathcona and Grandview Woodlands. The expansion is set to cost $3 million, $2 million from Moby Operator and $1 million from TransLink. The city's four nonpartisan association councillors voted against the expansion. NPA councillor George Affleck argued that the expanded bike share program will lead to losses in parking revenue for the city.
Vancouver police ticket motorists with iPhone and iPad attached to the steering wheel. The Vancouver Police Department's traffic unit stumbled upon a driver who took multitasking to new levels. The police pulled over a driver on Cambie Street near Broadway because he was plugged to his headphones, only to find out that the driver had an iPhone and an iPad fastened to his steering wheel with a string. Interestingly, the police only issued a violation ticket of $81 for failing to produce a driver's license and did not issue a ticket for distracted driving. According to a VPD spokesperson, the ticketing officer decided that educating the driver about hazard was a more effective approach. Typically, distracted driving carries a ticket of $368. The Insurance Corporation of BC says drivers are five times more likely to crash while operating a handheld device.
Boost in tourism improves bottom line of Vancouver hotels. Hotels in Vancouver and the province at large witnessed higher occupancy rates and improved revenues thanks to a booming tourism sector in British Columbia in the first half of 2017. According to the U.S. hospitality research firm Marcus & Millichap, revenue per room of Vancouver hotels increased by 7.2% over the past year. Vancouver's hotel occupancy appears to have increased regardless of any influence Airbnb and other short-term rental services might be having on the market, which are hard to estimate.
Vancouver approves regulation for Airbnb services. On Tuesday, the City Council approved regulations for the more than 6,000 short-term rentals in Vancouver. This move will make sure that almost 80% of short-term rentals are now legal in Vancouver. Home sharing services like Airbnb have become increasingly popular over recent years despite largely operating without regulation. The new rules will take effect on April 1, 2018. According to these regulations, homeowners or renters will need to purchase a $49 annual license and pay a $54 one-time activation fee. They can then rent out part or all of their principal homes for less than 30 days at a time. Operators are also required to include the business license on their Airbnb listing or face a fine of up to $1,000.
New real estate rules estimate to be introduced in BC in 2018. The BC government has announced that changes to cut down on shady will take effect on March 15, 2018. These changes will inform buyers on appropriate compensation of real estate agents and restrict agents from representing buyers and sellers within a single deal. The goal is to decrease the rate of shadow flipping, which is the practice of selling a property multiple times by reassigning the sales contracts. The price of the homes goes up every time it is flipped. REMAX real estate agent Keith Roy believes that the changes will highlight the issue, but will do little to solve it. Roy says that all the new rules do is limit the ability of a realtor to represent two people inside the same transaction.
BC associations push for a ban on homegrown marijuana after legalization. BC groups are calling for a ban on non-medical marijuana grown at home. The drug is set to become legal on July 2018. the BC government asked a number of groups to design a framework for how to sell and regulate marijuana once it becomes legal. Doctors of BC, a provincial medical association, is calling for the province to ban homegrown marijuana. Doctors of BC suggest imposing limitations on personal possession of marijuana to track adverse reaction to marijuana use and to separate marijuana from alcohol sales. The group Landlord BC believes the owner should have the right to grow marijuana. However, renters should not. CEO of Landlord BC, David Hodniak, is worried about the potential for dozens of personal grow-ups in one apartment building.
Eastside Cultural Crawl gets underway today in Vancouver. Vancouver's beloved four-day festival of arts, crafts, and design kicked off today. Over 500 artist studios, homes, and garages in the city's Eastside neighborhood opened up to the public to show off the creativity of the city's artists. The east side of Vancouver boasts the most densely populated community of artists in Canada. During the culture crawl, anyone is welcome to stop by and take pottery classes, participate in a glass-blowing workshops, or even watch a live chainsaw cutting demonstration. The festival runs today and tomorrow from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Those were this week's headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to take a short break and then hear an exclusive story on CBC's digital strategy featuring CBC's outgoing president and CEO, Hubert Lacroix, and assistant professor at the Liu Institute for Global Issues and the Graduate School of Journalism, Taylor Owen.
Three women dressed in lingerie were hanging from the ceiling on meat hooks. In an adjacent room, a man was in bed with two deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman, lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like entertainment? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
UBC Theatre and Film presents a world premiere shining with love and possibility. Wives and Daughters by Jacqueline Firkins, based on Elizabeth Gaskell's Victorian serial novel, is a charming romp of love convoluted by hidden desires and expectations.
I like to be liked, but when people carry their affection too far, they become troublesome.
Cynthia's a sweet girl and charming, but she was always in some spot of trouble. She wasn't mischievous exactly, but mischief seems to follow her.
Join us from November 9th to 25th at the Frederick Wood Theater.
After a certain age, a daughter becomes inconvenient.
So we must stop being inconvenient daughters and become inconvenient wives?
Theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
Tired of begging for rides from your friends?
Bobby, I don't have time to take you to the soda shop again this week.
Lugging those groceries on the bus got you in a sweat?
Man, oh man, these bags of salt sure are hefty.
Being on campus without a car ain't easy, so check out Zipcar and get wheels when you want them. Join now to get your membership for only $20 at zipcar.ca/UBC.
Hello, welcome back. This is Rahmatullah Sheikh, and you're listening to Democracy Watch, broadcasting live from UBC on CITR 101.9 FM. We just heard the headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, and are now going to listen to an exclusive report on CBC's digital media strategy. First, we will hear a story report by Ryan Patrick Jones on the outgoing president and CEO of Radio Canada, Hubert Lacroix, and the implementation of his digital-first strategy. This piece was produced by Ryan Patrick Jones, Rahmatullah Sheikh, that's myself, Olamide Olanian, and Alex DeBoer.
I want to talk to you about change.
Digital technologies, especially the internet, have changed the way we live and the way we communicate with each other. The same is true for the way we produce and consume our news. That was the message that outgoing CBC President Hubert Lacroix brought with him to the Leo Institute of Global Affairs at the University of British Columbia. I'm Ryan Patrick Jones, reporting for Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM.
And I am Rahmatullah Sheikh. A few weeks ago, in a speech to journalism students at UBC, Lacroix laid out a case for the CBC's digital strategy. The national public broadcaster has always played an integral part in the life of Canadians. Now, according to Lacroix, more Canadians than ever get information about their communities and their country from CBC.
Lacroix started off his speech by talking about CBC's digital-first strategy. As part of this plan, more resources are being allocated to producing content for CBC News websites and for promoting it on CBC's social media platforms. This is a move away from CBC's legacy as a radio and TV broadcaster.
From a company known for its legacy assets, literally television and radio, we are the number one digital media company in the country. We went from television, radio, web, and mobile, and in 2014 decided that we were going mobile, web, radio, and television.
According to Lacroix, the strategy is proving successful.
In the past 2 years only, unique visitors have increased from 5 million to close to 7 million on the website. And if you only take the mobile numbers, we've increased from 3.2 million to 5.1 million.
Lacroix spoke about how CBC's digital reporting provided vital information during the Fort McMurray wildfires.
On a good night in Edmonton, we get about maybe 15,000 people that watch CBC News at 6, summer. The newscast. 20 million people went to our websites on Radio-Canada and CBC and on the phones for that information over the course of the Fort McMurray fires.
Lacroix said the tools of journalists are changing and there are new ways for them to reach their audiences. He illustrated this with the example of Radio-Canada reporter Thomas Gerbet. Gerbet traveled to India and produced regular news clips for the national news using only an iPhone.
That Thomas Gerbet went to India with one iPhone. That's it. That's all for 3 weeks. So we took a chance. We decided that we wanted to see how much we could actually do with an iPhone. He, with that one piece, would cut the story, put it on air, and we would get this in the evening for the national news because we followed him through the eyes of Céline Galipeau, who was our Peter Mansbridge, for a number of weeks. And we tested ourselves. We talk about innovation, one iPhone.
Another interesting example he used was of Claudiane Sampson, the only Radio Canada journalist in Yukon.
One person making us more visible than ever in the Yukon, cutting stories by herself, putting them online, making them available to all, so that the persons and the people who live in the Yukon actually can get something in French, which is something we never actually did before. We didn't have any resources, and we couldn't send 3 or 4 or 5 people in the Yukon to cover. Now with the tools, she can do everything by herself. And it's funny when she says, one person production team.
Lacroix spoke about the relaunch of the flagship nightly newscast, The National. The revamped format will explore stories more in depth and cover multimedia platforms to keep the national conversation flowing.
You're going to see a new National. So instead of going 90 seconds, sound bites, videos, and re-giving you in different words what you already know, we actually want you to pause with us and understand what the situation is. So the journalists that are behind that are focused right now on explaining those difficult stories to Canadians in words that they can understand. And the New National is more than the four hosts. It's a complete package. It starts in the morning. It doesn't wait for 10. It's going to have an interactive environment, website. It's going to be an app. It's going to be a blog. It's going to be a newsletter. It's going to go all day long. And when you're going to come in at 10, it's going to be a lot of live stuff. So that the conversations are extremely important between the four hosts, and you're going to see them at different times.
While the internet and digital technologies are changing the way we consume and produce the news for the better, Lacroix warns that there is also a dark side. In particular, he talked about how the traditional model of journalism that relied on advertising is breaking down. Big tech companies like Google and Facebook are gobbling up advertising revenue and using journalistic content without investing in journalism. He also talked about the dangers of fake news.
We have more information, but it doesn't mean that we have more reliable information, and we have so many examples of that recently. You know, Las Vegas, bad stuff happens. All of a sudden, information is deliberately false being spread in the digital world. First, we identify an innocent man. Then, we allege that the gunman, not we, but the environment in which we live, alleges that he's Muslim. So I think we should be concerned about this, and this is one thing that makes the public broadcaster so focused right now on being a trusted news brand.
Towards the end of the talk, Lacroix spoke about a proposal CBC made to the government last year. They asked for over $400 million in additional funding so that the broadcaster can go completely ad-free.
We want to become an ad-free broadcaster, like the BBC or the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. We don't believe that the public broadcaster should have ads. But we have $300 million of revenues every year that depend on our television ad revenues. And if you take out $300 million of our broadcasting model, of our funding model right now, you got to replace it or not. Do you know how much it would cost Canadians for CBC Radio Canada to go ad free? $1 more per Canadian per month, 12 bucks a year. So instead of 34 bucks, we would go to $46 a year.
The main theme of Lacroix's talk was how CBC's digital first strategy is helping the broadcaster better engage with the Canadian audience, and how it is striving to become the country's most trusted media brand. Lacroix spoke exclusively to Democracy Watch after his talk.
Can I just start by asking you, what is the role of a public broadcaster in democracy generally, and in Canada specifically?
Public broadcaster is the place for trusted news. It's independent from government, and that gives it the credibility it needs to actually be able to speak to the citizens of that country and give them, in a fair and balanced way, what is going on either in the country or in any country in the world, and in for Canada, for example, because we are completely independent from government, we actually can take the government stories or news conferences, and we can actually challenge if we see that the information does not actually jive with something that was done recently or that was said recently. So we take them to task. But that's the checks and balances that a society like ours, a democratic society like the one that exists in Canada, this is what we applaud and we are very happy to contribute to.
Okay, and thank you. So a significant number of Canadians now get their news from social media. So how has the rise of social media affected how the CBC does journalism?
It has changed the way that we think about news. It has allowed us to push into the digital environment like we are. Now we actually have a whole bunch of platforms, either through the Facebooks of the world or the Instagrams of the world or any other social media environment like that. We want to be present there because we want to be connecting with Canadians. So the stories that we tell, we want to make sure that we engage with you. And if your choice is to be on a phone somewhere, we'd like to be on that platform so that you can see our content.
Excellent. So what is the role of traditional media organizations in combating the spread of fake news?
Our job, and again, I'm just going to speak about CBC Radio Canada. Our job is to make sure that the information that is transmitted by our media fits the requirements of our journalistic standards and policies. And we have our ombudsman, we're the only organization in the country with ombudsmen, actually check the complaints that come from public, from the public, from Canadians, about how we treated a particular piece of information. So that gives us the credibility necessary in this environment to either combat fake news or to actually point and find fake news and substitute it with the accurate information that the CBC brand is so known for.
And so the CBC is putting a lot of faith in digital for the future, as outlined in the most recent five-year strategy, Strategy 2020. So recently I read an article by Franklin Foer in The Atlantic. He's the former editor of The New Republic, where he kind of argues that media organizations have been overtaken by a Silicon Valley ethos. And similarly, in The Walrus, Tom Yokinen mentions that CBC gives a lot of prominence to Chartbeat metrics, which measure digital traffic on news websites. I'm just wondering, do you think the pursuit of growing audiences has distracted the CBC from its mandate to report on issues of national importance?
I don't think so, not at all. I think what it has done is it gives us an idea of whether the story is compelling, whether the way we told the story is compelling, and whether we are actually reaching Canadians and having a conversation about what they care. And you got to remember that I said a few seconds ago in the chat with your colleagues, 85 or 86% of Canadians still watch television in a linear way. And we have a whole bunch of people listening to radio. I mean, 21 of the 26 markets that are measured by BBM, we're in the number one radio morning program. What does that mean? It means, yes, the social platforms are there, the digital platforms are there, but we can't forget the more traditional audiences. And it's the combination of both of our involvement in social media and the traditional audiences that makes us the broadcaster that we are.
And so you spoke a bit about a revamp of The National. So I was wondering if you could just talk about this kind of reconceptualization of The National and why it's necessary in today's media environment.
Because at 10 p.m., everybody in the country, 9 p.m. if you're watching it on the news network, knows what has gone on during the day. So The National cannot be simply a recitation of what has happened and in 90-second sound bites. It has to be more than that. And that's what The National is going to try to be. It's going to be more live. It's going to be throughout the day. It's going to be a brand. It's going to be a newsletter. It's going to be a site. It's going to be something that is going to be alive for the whole of the day and not simply at 9 or 10 p.m., depending on when you watch it.
And so the CBC has struggled to increase diversity among its staff. What has the CBC been doing to rectify this issue today?
We have a clear understanding and mission to improve, add digital skills, add skills of all kind to our staff. We have a goal of 23.2%, and you're going to joke and say, La Croix, why 23.2? But I'll tell you in a sec. 23.2% of all of our hires between now and by 2020 need to be from a diverse background. And why 23.2? Because that's the average of all the metrics that we've used and all the other organizations in terms of what is an acceptable goal. And we hope that by doing that, we are going to be representative of what I call Canada's mosaic, because we can't not realize that the country is changing. And depending where you are in the country, and you're in Vancouver, more than 50% of the population is Asian. You go to Toronto, it's multi-ethnic. You go to Montreal, it's different again. So we need to be different, and we need to be the reflection of our audiences.
Excellent. So looking back on your time as president and CEO of CBC Radio-Canada, what have you learned?
I've learned that CBC Radio-Canada is an incredibly rich place with incredible talent. I've fallen in love with our country even more because I've been able to travel and see the country with different eyes. I have learned that democracy is extremely important. It's one of the pillars of a just society, and that we actually play a seriously important role at making sure that it's maintained, so that Canadians, like Bono used to say, Canada, I mean, the world needs more Canadas.
And is there anything that you would have done differently?
Oh, I think I would have been less patient with people that resisted change. I think that I would have tried to focus on the digital transformation maybe even sooner. Making cuts at the CBC because of the financial environment was extremely difficult. Would I have done it differently? Maybe. It's been a great ride, and when people ask me, so how is it at CBC? I always answer, not boring.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
And that was an interview with CBC Radio-Canada President and CEO Hubert Lacroix. I'm Ryan Jones.
And I am Rahmatullah Sheikh. This is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard a story on the outgoing CBC President and CEO Hubert Lacroix and the CBC's digital-first strategy. We'll now listen to a piece that continues this topic. Fellow News Collective member Ryan Patrick Jones, who you just heard, and myself, Rahmatullah Sheikh, had the opportunity to interview Taylor Owen, the assistant professor at the Liu Institute of Global Issues and the Graduate School of Journalism, and also the author of the book Disruptive Power, The Crisis of the State in the Digital Age. He shared his thoughts on the CBC's digital media strategy. Owen is a regular contributor to Canada's ongoing debate on the digital media and journalism. He has interesting insights to share on what he thinks will or will not work for CBC's digital-first strategy. Stay tuned.
Thank you very much for taking the time to do this.
No problem.
So you've written a book about the disruptions caused by digital technologies in the areas of politics and global affairs. What major changes has the digital disruption brought to the practice of journalism?
Where to start? So many. I mean, the biggest single change in the journalism space was that it used to be that to reach large, broad audiences, you needed an industrial production capability. So you needed to be a broadcaster or a newspaper with delivery trucks or a radio station with access to radio spectrum, right? You needed the industrial capacity to reach large numbers of people. And that's just not the case anymore. Anybody can reach anybody. And anybody can have an audience. And that's fundamentally challenged the monopoly that professionals and big institutions had over journalism. So we're seeing the repercussions of that now, I think.
Right. And so the traditional business model for media organizations is seeming to be obsolete.
Yeah.
So how has this broken economic model affected the quality of journalism in Canada?
I mean, it's interesting. It depends how you define quality, right? I mean, it has fundamentally undermined the ability of large industrial journalism organizations to produce the kind of journalism they produced, right? And a lot of people think that's high quality, right? Mm-hmm. It's what we think of as 20th century relatively objective reporting-based journalism,
right?
And that is in decline because that model, there's far less money in that, mm-hmm. in that ecosystem, right? But a lot of that stuff wasn't good quality, right? There was a lot of bad journalism that happened inside this industrial model too, in part because it was so profitable, right? Because the margins were so huge inside this industry that it led to all sorts of sort of far more extreme versions of that journalism emerging, or just really bad, lazy journalism because they were making so much money.
Right.
So the hope of the internet was that now that many more people could make smaller amounts of money, or that the revenue sources were diversified and the voices were diversified, that you might get a broader range of types of content, and that might ultimately lead to more quality. I think for a time that probably existed, but now we're faced with some other challenges around reconsolidation inside platforms, inside Facebook and Google, which has caused sort of a second-order effect of this disruption.
Right. So the CBC has made a big transformation over the past years, switching to a digital-first business model with its Strategy 2020 plan. And in his talk at the Liu Institute, outgoing CEO President Hubert Lacroix proudly stated that the CBC was the number one digital media company in Canada. Do you think it's a good choice for CBC to be in direct competition with other Canadian media organizations in the digital space?
So again, it means by what do you mean by competition, right? So if it's competition for content to people to choose what kind of content they consume, then absolutely. If it's in terms of business competition for the for the monetization of that consumption, then no.
So you're speaking about advertising specifically?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So CBC Digital, when it launched, made the decision, and they would say forced decision because of their revenue structure, they just didn't have extra funding to launch a whole new digital product.
Right.
So they monetized it. So they did what everybody was doing in the digital space. And the way you monetized media was to monetize traffic. Mm-hmm. So they sold ads against their traffic. And they do because they're the CBC, they're the only truly national broadcaster in the country. They had huge reach, huge audience, a big built-in audience there that they automatically started off. When they clicked the switch for ad sales, mm-hmm. it was a significant revenue source,
right?
The problem with that is twofold. One, you're competing against other media companies for those ad dollars.
Right.
So by definition, you're probably driving the cost of those ads down and the revenue going to other places, right? And I think that's relatively easily dismissed. It's a marginal problem. The far bigger problem, from my perspective, is that the biggest problem in the ad-based model of journalism is a race to traffic mm-hmm. and to the type of incentives that places on the production of journalism. Because the second you put traffic as your primary financial driver of a piece of content, it changes what you report on, how you write about your story, what you emphasize in your story, what headline you write for your story, right? It has all these trickle-down effects that I think is degrading the quality of journalism we produce, right? So the second the CBC puts that signal that we care about how the reach and the monetization of that reach of our journalism, and they say that to their journalists and their editors and their managers, I think it puts them in the exact same spot as all the other media companies, which is a slowly degrading news product. And the one amazing opportunity you have with a public broadcaster is to not be in that economic model, right? That's this like incredible luxury that we as a society has given and have placed in responsibility, we've placed in the CBC. And then we've undermined it by saying, okay, you also have to make money on ads, which then makes you just like all the rest, right? So we're losing the very value we've created in hiving this thing off and treating it differently as a public broadcaster.
Well, that was exactly my next question. So Franklin Foer, a former editor of The New Republic, wrote in The Atlantic that media organizations risk being overtaken by a Silicon Valley ethos that pursues traffic above all else. And in an August feature for The Walrus, Tom Jokinen mentions that the CBC gives prominence to Chartbeat metrics that measure digital traffic on its news website. Do you think the pursuit of growing audiences has distracted CBC from its mandate to report on issues of national importance?
Yes. I mean, distracted is the right word because they still do report on issues of national importance. There's still fabulous journalism that happens within the CBC, mm-hmm. but I think it is a distraction. Right. And it's a distraction that is increasingly costly at a time when there's such limited quality journalism in our ecosystem,
right?
That we do have this opportunity to have this one thing that sits outside of these crazy market demands, which I agree with. I don't agree with everything Franklin Foer says in that article in his new book, but I agree with him that ethos of scale-based revenue for journalism is deeply pernicious.
Right.
And CBC is going down that path. So they have to be, I think, if we're going to put money into them at all, mm-hmm. it needs to be isolated from that market mechanism.
Okay. So you were also a principal researcher for the Shattered Mirror report on the state of the media industry in Canada. And one of its recommendations was that the CBC should change its content licensing strategy and begin publishing all civic journalism under a Creative Commons license. Hubert Lacroix said he's not comfortable with that idea because of the risks involved in CBC's content falling into the wrong hands. What would you say to that?
Well, I mean, this is an indication of the mentality that is also problematic inside the CBC, which is that the public can't be trusted, for one, to produce and disseminate and debate and engage in this kind of content, right? Which is a problem. But also a misreading of what Creative Commons licenses do, right? You can put pretty strict controls on who can do what with a piece of Creative Commons content, right? And this is probably the bigger one, is that it continues to see CBC as a competitor against other media companies. And I think the idea, this is really ingrained inside the institution, which is you ask them who their competitors are, and they would say the Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, Global, right?
Yeah.
All of which are private companies.
Right.
And I'm not sure that mentality of competing against the Toronto Star really is what we should be embedding inside a public broadcaster. Instead, if you think of it as this a platform that creates content that then can be distributed by anybody, mm-hmm. with the goal of as many people using it and engaging with it as possible, what better way than to let others not be competitors, but instead be your distributors or be your, right? So why on earth wouldn't we be happy if the Toronto Star puts a great piece of CBC journalism on its front page and then it reaches a million new people?
Right.
Like, that to me is fulfilling that core objective of the CBC, which is to get their high quality content in front of as many Canadians as possible, or impacting as many Canadians as possible, right? So why not leverage all these other private companies to help be the distribution channel? Because one thing we know about the internet is no one organization is the destination for everybody's news. Mm-hmm. That's just not how it works. So the CBC will never be the place every Canadian gets its news. But a CBC piece of journalism could reach most Canadians if it was disseminated openly through a Creative Commons license, right? So it means shifting what the CBC is from a competitor media company to a producer of journalism that then gets distributed through the ecosystem, the news ecosystem.
Okay, so is that how you would define success for the CBC, is reaching the most number of Canadians?
I mean, it's a tricky question of how do you define the impact of journalism, right?
Like,
so sometimes it will be breaking big stories and holding power to account, and sometimes it will be just telling people about their daily lives, and that has a really meaningful, plays a meaningful role in people's lives, right? So I think the CBC's success is many things across different. But I do think at a time when the entire debate is being radically fragmented across pieces, producers of content that all look the same, that all have access to huge audience, that can purchase access to huge audience on platforms, that having a robust public broadcaster that's content is distributed as widely as possible inside these ecosystems, the better. But that's going to require them to think of themselves, honestly, more like a ProPublica than like a Globe and Mail.
So you think there needs to be a mindset change?
I think the mindset is to be, they are a producer of high quality journalism, not a destination for that journalism.
Right.
And it's a very different thing.
Okay.
ProPublica doesn't care if you go to the ProPublica website.
Right.
They want to have impact. So they'd rather their story appear on the front page of the New York Times saying produced by ProPublica, mm-hmm. than sit on their site and not be consumed. But they own the entire distribution of it. Right, so they make that trade-off, and I think maybe that's a bit extreme for the CBC, but that, to me, that's the direction it should be going.
Okay, so one of Hubert Lacroix's suggestions for the CBC is that it receive additional public funding so that it can go ad-free, and CBC has submitted a proposal to the federal government for $418 million per year in extra funding to achieve that end. He cited the CBC as BBC as an example of a public broadcaster that's doing a lot of good work and which enjoys higher per capita funding. What are your thoughts on that proposal?
So in principle, agree. There's an opportunity for more revenue. The problem is that number is grossly out of step with the advertising revenue they currently receive, right? I think it's 20-something million off digital ads. So they could turn off digital ads for 26, I think, million, something like that, million dollars a year, which is not $400 million a year,
right?
So first, I actually think the digital ads are the most pernicious problem. So we could get rid of that overnight for very little money. And if they can tell me they can't find $26 or $30 million a year somewhere in the CBC, like in order to get rid of this deep problem in the center of, I think, their digital strategy, then that doesn't need $400 million a year to solve that problem, right?
I think he's talking also about broadcast ads as well.
Exactly. So that's a whole other thing. Getting rid of broadcast ads is a much more complicated thing because it's 100 and something million a year as opposed to the 20 or 30, right? So and it's just much more embedded in the entire infrastructure of the CBC because a lot of these shows are commercial and all this kind of stuff, right? But sure, but when they asked for the $400 million, it wasn't spelled out where this money really was going to go. There were huge generalities in this, right at a time when, I think it's fine for, and I think maybe we should be paying more for a public broadcaster. But I'm not sure there's broad support in the Canadian public for just increasing budget to an institution that people see some challenges with, right? It feels to me like a better first step would be saying, this is the direction we want to go. Here's where we think there's some real inefficiencies or types of content we're producing that we don't think is aligned directly with our mandate. And so we're going to stop doing those things or shift our culture a bit to make up that money and get rid of digital ads to produce this like best in class digital product in Canada. And then maybe we could talk about increasing funds to do it in other platforms, right? So I don't know, maybe it's just a slight different shift in approach, but they've also, to their defense, CBC's been under attack for over a decade,
right?
There was a decade period where they were in a defensive posture against what they thought was a government that didn't have their interests in sort of front of mind, right? And I think that's probably true. And so what we're seeing now is a bit of a continuation of that defensive posture, which is when you think money might be able to be available, grab it. When you think you might be able to grow, right? Like that's what you do when you're in a defensive posture.
Yeah.
But that to me is not the most confident voice they could be displaying.
Do you want to take over?
Yeah. So you touched upon the question of platforms. So in the beginning, there was a lot of optimism surrounding the development of platforms and the reach that they were providing. And many academics and commentators were praising the ability to promote democracy. However, things are changing. We're seeing the meddling in elections and the questions surrounding it. So now the public opinion seems to be turning against them. What do you think has fundamentally changed about these social platforms, which were heralded as these messiahs for reach?
Yeah, it's a huge question. I think the main thing that's changed is that the way in which these companies have decided to monetize has meant selling access to their audience. And that is an incredibly lucrative model. So Facebook made $26 billion last year off selling data about their users and selling access to their users. It's incredibly effective for advertisers, for anyone who wants to reach an audience, whether it be a political campaign or a foreign government or a brand, right? Anyone who wants to reach a micro-targeted audience can now do it. What it's not good for is for the type of information that people are exposed to, because all of a sudden a big chunk of the content they're seeing is purchased. So when these platforms were more organic and they frankly weren't making money, they were just building audience, people were seeing things that were much more true to what their friends were sharing or what their interests might be. Or now there's a toxicity to the content they're seeing because they don't know if it was purchased. They don't know who purchased it. They don't know for what reason people purchased it, how people are trying to influence their opinions, their beliefs, their activities, their actions, right? So the big thing that's changed is these platforms, as they've scaled and as they've gone public, right? So the second these companies go public, they have to show revenue growth year on year. The way they've shown that revenue growth is by selling more and more data about their users. And that's changed the nature of the platforms.
Yeah, so there's one company which has certainly gone public, and it was the subject of your recent Globe and Mail opinion piece. So you wrote that Facebook is a threat to democracy. So what is it about Facebook that threatens democracy, and what should the Canadian government do about it?
So the particular argument was that a key part of our democracy is how we regulate our elections, right? That the key moment that we embed with importance inside our democracy is the moment when we all choose the makeup of our government, right? And we know that information and the information citizens receive is so important during that period and has such an effect on how we vote that we heavily regulate it. So we put strict limits on spending, on advertising spending. We don't allow foreign governments or foreign companies or foreign actors to buy access to the Canadian audience. We make every ad that's placed in front of a Canadian be transparent so that we can assess the impact it might have had after the fact, right? We say that speech is curtailed during elections because it's so important. That model of democracy is incompatible with the way platforms work. Platforms allow me as an advertiser or as one who wants to buy audience to purchase and place an ad in secret in front of any person I want without that money being disclosed, my origin or location being disclosed, or the ad itself being disclosed. So those two things are incompatible, I think. So something has to change. Either our election law changes and we say, look, the nature of free speech is different in the platform world, so we're going to change our election law, or the behavior of platforms has to change. And if neither of them do, then we have a real problem in our democracy.
Yeah, we're reaching the final two questions, actually. So one of the things that the outgoing CPC president was lamenting about was that Facebook and Google have become like the publishers, the de facto publishers. They distribute journalistic work and they gobble up ad revenues as well. But then do you think that they should also be contributing towards funding journalism in Canada? Because they use the journalistic content, but they don't really support it with their funds.
So he was arguing that the platforms should be funding journalism?
Yeah, he was saying that so Google and Facebook use our content to on their platforms, but then they don't really produce any of that content. So they should maybe fund journalism instead.
Yeah, to me, that's not the core problem. Because if the CBC doesn't want Facebook to use their content, they can pretty much stop it from doing so. If they don't want Google, their content to show up in Google search results, they can turn off the way in which Google sees their websites, right? They can, there's some degree of control over that on content producer's side. Up until now, these content producers have made the bargain where they said, look, it's worth it for us to have the reach on these platforms because that drives our audience and builds our audience and we monetize off that to a certain degree and revenue share off the traffic, right? So they've entered into this bargain with eyes wide open to a certain degree. So I don't think we can place all the blame on the platforms here for the problems, right? Like platforms are just really efficient at delivering these ads to people, much more efficient than these than journalistic organizations ever were, right? So I'm not sure. Maybe there's part of a solution where platforms do fund a bit more journalism. But that to me isn't the root cause of this. The root cause is the nature of the ecosystem itself, right? Not the relationship between these two. And if CBC really wants to not have their content distributed on Facebook, they should just take down their Facebook page. They have a Facebook page and they post their content on Facebook with the goal of it being shared, right? So I think it's then a little bit disingenuous to say, we then want to, you know, to turn on that. So I think they need to be part of this conversation as well.
All right, I think we gotta go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
This is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard an audio story on the CBC's digital media strategy reported by Ryan Patrick Jones and myself, Rahmatullah Sheikh, and this was produced by Alex DeBoer. We're going to take a short break, but stay tuned. We have some more on the other side.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Making a cuppa? Stop! How many cups of tea are you making? What? There's enough for 10 cups in there. Only boil the amount of water that you actually need. Very good, old boy.
That's right. The British are making less tea to conserve energy. Students can conserve energy, too.
A student's life often follows a pattern. Eat, sleep, study. During this routine, don't forget to make time for energy conservation. This will be the easiest thing you do all semester, and a little bit goes a long way. Do your laundry in cold water and hang clothes on standing dry racks or clotheslines instead of using electricity-intensive dryers. If a dryer is the only option, throw in a dry towel with wet clothes to absorb moisture and cut down on drying time.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9.
And we're back with Democracy Watch, CITR's weekly news show. I'm Alex DeBoer. We've spent the hour examining CBC's digital media strategy, hearing from outgoing CBC President and CEO Huber Lacroix, and digital journalism critic and UBC School Professor Taylor Owen. We're now going to have a news collective discussion on this topic with collective members Ryan Patrick Jones and Rematullah Sheikh. So just to kick off this discussion, I find the idea Taylor Owen put forward of CBC becoming more of an Associated Press-style news organization, meaning the CBC would stop competing with other media organizations and instead would produce content for other media organizations to syndicate. So I'm wondering, thinking about this, what do you two consider would be the positives and negatives of this? Because it seems like Taylor Owen sees this as a strategy with no downsides, but surely the CBC changing so immensely to just offer its content to other media organizations would have some downsides. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I agree. It would require a major transformation of the CBC's current role. And although it might be good for Canadian journalism in general, from the CBC's perspective, they may see a couple downfalls. They might be afraid of losing control of their content, even though they might have, you know, agreements with certain outlets. They don't know 100% if they're going to change it or not. It also might weaken their brand somewhat if their websites no longer become the primary destination for people to consume this content. But yeah, at the same time, I think it would free them up a lot to kind of focus on a lot of the civic journalism that the CBC was originally created for. What do you think, Rematullah?
Yeah, I think Taylor Owen does make a compelling case about why CBC should be making this transformation. But at the same time, we do see where Hubert Lacroix's fears come from. And this sort of came out in discussion with the students as well after his talk. So he did mention that he feared the content of CBC, which is supposed to be trusted and reliable, falling into the wrong hands. And this kind of ties in into his whole fear of fake news that we see these days. At the same time, the other issue with this problem would be that one of the metrics that's kind of their really being the highlight of the success of CBC is the traffic that they've generated. So if they really compromise on the traffic and stop turning that into a destination, as Taylor Owen says, and really democratize their content and really spread it out into other outlets, they would actually be blunting the one thing that they're really proud of, and that's traffic and engagement. It's a slippery slope, but Taylor Owen does certainly make a case for it.
Well, I think the point you make about fake news is interesting because I'm not sure, but obviously the Associated Press and other news organizations that share their content must have some strategy for vetting different platforms and different news organizations, right, where they give their content. And I'm not sure what that is, but there would be a way to do that for sure. In terms of having a loss in traffic for the website, I think it would be a matter of pivoting to measure success and engagement in other ways, so like the number of times their stories picked up.
And they could also do, you know, an aggregation of traffic on the platforms that they're working with as well to still get that kind of same measurement if that's really what they're interested in. And it kind of is, because Hubert Lacroix, you know, mentioned how digital technologies and podcasting and, websites and the internet have allowed the CBC to reach Canadians in different ways, but also to reach more Canadians. And so that ultimately seems to be their biggest goal, right? To inform, to enlighten, and to entertain Canadians. So I think the, you know, allowing them to reach more Canadians just on different platforms might work.
Yeah. The other thing he did speak about how content was really changing because of the digital technology and how they were able to say, kind of convey stories and reach places which were previously not possible. And this would in a way kind of give them another impetus to really step up their content, because now they would be opening up the field for other outlets to pick up on their content. So this would be an added advantage. The benchmark would not be what CBC has done, but the benchmark would be what others are expecting of them. So it's a double-edged thing, but then at the same time, there are some great points to be made over there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I can't help but think this could be an issue of ego a bit. And like I was saying to you two earlier, journalism is a competitive field where people want to be the first to break the story or win the award for best investigative piece, etc. And so maybe to have a stronger democracy, a more informed public through better journalism requires less of a sense of individual accomplishment and more of a sense of, you know, uniting to inform and holding people accountable. We only have about a minute and a half left, so I'll just end with a question that I don't think is super easy to answer. But I thought it was interesting when Heber Lacroix was talking about Chartbeat metrics, as you asked him about, Ryan, and how, you know, that's a way that they do measure engagement and connection with audiences. It makes sense. But stories that get clicked on, that get read, are often stories that are not the most important. As we all know, like, stories about animals get a lot of attention. So I'm just wondering, like, and Taylor Owen was commenting on, it's hard to measure this too, but do you two have any insights into how we could really measure what journalism is actually connecting and informing Canadian citizens, and what is just kind of entertaining them?
Yeah, it would. I mean, if the benchmark of good journalism is our cat videos, that kind of sounds a death knell for people like Ryan and myself, who came into the journalism school expecting and aspiring to make some good content. But then it kind of also ties into the whole revenue and ad model, right? So if they do have this opportunity, if their advertising is tied into their reach, and if there is any way they can kind of do away with the ad model and be completely funded, and Ubelaco makes a case for that, mm-hmm. Then maybe they can stop, kind of chasing those engagements and focus on making some really good, heart-hitting, impactful content instead of cat videos.
I agree. I mean, I think that the numbers are important to a certain extent, because it definitely gives you a metric by which to measure how far your story has reached, how many Canadians, yada, yada, yada. But by placing too much emphasis on numbers, I think there should be a combination of, you know, these metrics, but also something that's a bit more subjective about what kind of impact does this journalism have mm-hmm. in our community. And as you mentioned, that's very difficult to measure, but mm-hmm. I'm sure someone could figure it out.
Yeah, well, that's a good point to end on. So that is Democracy Watch for today. It is November 16th at 6 p.m. We hope you enjoyed the show and our focus on CBC's Digital First Strategy. Please tune in next week. We're on again Thursday, 5 to 6, CITR 101.9 FM. And stay tuned. The next show on CITR is Are You Aware?